This is Audible.
Hachette Audio presents Liars, Leakers, and Liberals, the case against the anti-Trump conspiracy. Written and read by Judge Jeanine Pirro.
To all the men and women who've made it their life's mission to enforce our laws without fear or favor, leaving their politics at the door to ensure equal justice under the law for everyone, we salute them for their service to us and their unrelenting determination to protect this great nation. Chapter 1. Here's my open. As we approach the publication date for this book, I continue to be amazed at how quickly the news moves, especially in the age of Trump. And, as if Donald J. Trump's election itself weren't enough of a shock to our nation's political core, the subsequent months have proved to be an even greater jolt. The left-wing liberal media have savaged not only President Trump, but everyone around him. Anyone connected to the president is fair game. Melania, Ivanka, Jared, Don Jr., Eric, Lara, Tiffany, and even 12-year-old Barron. The media have criticized everything about them, from their hair, accents, mannerisms, and styles, to their intelligence and patriotism. They've even been attacked for their choice of footwear. No one and nothing has been spared. If the first family had a dog, they would probably call it a Russian bot. It was worse on social media. Lara told me when her pregnancy was announced, there were posts from people saying they hoped she fell down the stairs and had a miscarriage. Just when you thought the left couldn't sink any lower, they did. Horrifying. Those working in the White House haven't been spared either. From the highest-ranking Marine general in the nation, now Chief of Staff John Kelly, to Counselor to the President Kellyanne Conway, to White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders, to former Director of Communications Hope Hicks. The haters march, protest, riot, resist, obstruct, and jump into their ninja Antifa get-ups, suffering from Trump derangement syndrome. One woman in particular is still suffering as she wanders around the woods in Chappaqua, New York, searching for the reason she lost. Not even the people who voted for Trump have been spared. A chief White House correspondent for CNN recently said, "They don't have all their faculties, and in some cases, their elevator might not hit all floors." Jim Acosta has since said he wasn't talking about Trump supporters, but we know what the liberal media think of Trump voters. They're deplorables, idiots, rednecks, and people who cling to God, guns, and religion. To those charges, I plead guilty. Guilty and proud. How we got here. Donald Trump came to us at a time when we needed his tough talk and unvarnished perspective. We had just suffered under an administration riddled with corruption, double talk, a feckless foreign policy, and a disastrous economy. This was an administration that approved the sale of 20% of America's uranium to Russia with a $145 million payback to the Clinton Foundation and a quick $500,000 to Bill for a speech in Moscow. Obama's Department of Justice was so corrupt, so unlawful, so immoral that they tried to drag a corrupt woman across the 2016 presidential election finish line after she put our classified secrets at risk. They watched as she deleted 30,000 emails and destroyed evidence. Those running a more than one-year-long so-called criminal investigation with no grand jury, no search warrants, no subpoenas, and prophylactic immunities for everyone involved without requiring their testimony allowed her to get away with it. Our economy was in shambles. The workforce participation rate was lower than at any time in our nation's history. Millions weren't employed because they simply gave up looking for work. Hundreds of thousands were working three part-time jobs to make ends meet. While the Obama team said it was a healthy economy, there was barely a pulse. 1% annual GDP growth was the new normal for these bozos. Meanwhile, there were some in the workforce who should not have been in the country in the first place. Record numbers of illegal aliens had crossed our borders. Along with jobs, they and their families helped themselves to tax-funded education, medication, and housing. And when the illegals committed crimes, they were given the best lawyers and translators the criminal justice system could buy. The same people who burned and trashed the American flag, driving around with the foreign flags of their home countries waving atop their vehicles, would kick, scream, and demand their constitutional rights, calling Americans racist if, God forbid, we tried to send them back to the countries their flags represented. Speaking of God, people of faith across the country were faced with the dilemma of upholding the secular Obamacare law to provide abortive fashions to pregnant women or violating God's law. It seemed the government was not there to defend our First Amendment religious freedoms, but to gut them. Christians were horrified as the Obama administration dragged the Little Sisters of the Poor all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court to force them to violate their religious beliefs. Gun owners across the country were being blamed for every lunatic who took a weapon and killed others, while at the same time being lectured about not blaming all Muslims for the actions of a violent few. We were told how many guns we should own, how big our clips should be, how many bullets we could keep in our magazines, or that we really should not have guns at all. Globally, we had a president who couldn't comprehend terrorism, calling ISIS a JV team. He couldn't figure out whether to contain them, dismantle them, or destroy them, none of which he did. As this JV team unleashed brutal, inhumane genocide on innocent Christians across the Middle East and Africa, Obama spouted off at a national prayer breakfast that people committed terrible deeds in the name of Christ. Yes, Donald Trump arrived just in time, when our nation needed him most, when we needed to be protected and inspired. To be sure, Trump was not your typical politically correct candidate. Unlike the two-faced parasites in Washington, he really wanted to make America great again. They tagged him with every negative characterization they could. They called him a fascist, a racist, and twisted everything he said. Why? Because he was a threat to the greedy, corrupt Washington insiders who had captured our government. And he did what other candidates wouldn't dream of. In addition to the establishment, he took on the media. They said it was suicide. They were wrong. Donald Trump was speaking to the rest of America in a way they understood. He prioritized law and order and the safety of American citizens over criminal illegal immigrants and terrorists. As a Christian, he took on those who made believers uncomfortable for stating their Judeo-Christian beliefs. He stood for the hard-working, forgotten men and women who didn't get a fair shot at a better life, but were instead made to pay for those who violate the rules. He criticized the $1.7 billion cash transfer of funds to a nation committed to our destruction, as well as the destruction of Israel. That is why Donald Trump stepped into the spotlight, a patriot who believed in putting America's interests first, who believed the decline of a great nation was a choice we could reject. He reignited the flame of liberty by swearing to rebuild our bare-bones military. Americans bought into the promise of a man whose views were most like the moral vision of the framers of the Constitution, a man whose philosophy was based not on politics, but reason. Donald Trump understands we are born with certain natural rights that come not from government, but from God, and that government wields power only with the consent of the governed. The anti-Trump conspiracy. When Donald Trump reawakened the American spirit, the establishment was far more corrupt and deeply rooted than we imagined. We knew most politicians enter office with modest means and leave with enormous wealth for themselves or close family members. We knew that one hand washed the other, accepting horse trading across the aisle as the way democracy was supposed to work. What we didn't know was how little it mattered which party was in power. It didn't matter because the establishment was the power. Once Donald Trump entered the political landscape, a rogues gallery of liars, leakers, and liberals joined forces to ensure the establishment stayed in power regardless of what all those deplorable voters wanted. The anti-Trump movement is a conspiracy by the powerful and connected to overturn the will of the American people. Among the co-conspirators are FBI officials illegally exonerating their favorite candidate of violating well-defined federal criminal statutes, first to help her get elected and then to frame Donald J. Trump for Russia collusion that never happened. It all began when members of the Obama administration, seeking a Hillary Clinton presidency and a continuation of Obama's platform, used the intelligence community to spy on the campaign of the Republican candidate for president. But once the unelected deep state got on board, the anti-Trump conspiracy grew from mere dirty politics to an assault on our republic itself. Continuing beyond Election Day and throughout President Trump's term to date, the lying, leaking liberal establishment has sought to nullify the decision of the American people and continue the globalist, open-border oligarchy that the people voted to dismantle in 2016. The perpetrators of this anti-American plot include, but are not limited to, the leadership at the FBI, the CIA, NSA, and other intelligence agencies, the Democrat Party, and perhaps even the FISA, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, courts. And let's not forget the media and entertainment industries that are waging a nonstop propaganda campaign that would render envious their counterparts in the worst totalitarian states of history. Yes, this is a conspiracy, and you and anyone who loves the America described in our founding documents are among its victims. The rule of law has become irrelevant, and politically motivated fiction has become truth. The fake news media are trying their hardest to deny this conspiracy. One of their arguments is that key players at the FBI and elsewhere are Republicans, meaning they supposedly would not help Democrat Hillary Clinton get elected or Donald Trump be defeated. They're either missing the point or deliberately ignoring it. Donald Trump was more than a Republican candidate running against more than the Democrat Party. He was the outsider candidate, the populist candidate, virtually his own party. As far as his voters were concerned, the establishment's major parties are meaningless. Plenty of Republicans lined up against Trump in 2016, even during the general election. National Review did an entire issue during the primaries called Against Trump, in an attempt to prevent him from winning the nomination. Plenty of Democrats and independents who voted for Barack Obama in 2012 voted for Trump in 2016. There were two completely new parties in that election, the Swamp Party and the American People's Party. The former is comprised of longtime incumbents, entrenched government employees in the intelligence community and Pentagon, popularly known as the Deep State. The rest of the D.C. bureaucracy, the fake news media, and the connected corporations with their army of lobbyists. They all had a vested interest in maintaining the status quo. The latter is made up of the forgotten men and women who comprise the real America, on whose backs these globalist elites ride to unprecedented power and wealth, along with those few politicians who remained true to the oaths they took to the Constitution. The American People's Party is led by the man who gave up the fairy tale life of a successful billionaire to be their champion, Donald J. Trump. Yet despite a media focused on whack-a-mole Trump-Russian collusion nonsense and the haters continuing to hate, the outsider president has thundered forward with his America First agenda. With a kryptonite-proof aura of invincibility, the 45th president, often working without the support of his own party, has accomplished more during his first year and a half than most presidents in two full terms. That's why, in addition to exposing the vast conspiracy against it, I'm going to tell you about the real Trump presidency, which has accomplished so much despite the dark forces arrayed against it. That includes tax reform, a booming economy, record low unemployment, and a renewed manufacturing base. ISIS is vanquished. There are historic peace talks on the Korean Peninsula, and we are moving toward a more mutually respectful relationship with China. I'm talking about fairer trade with partners who have run roughshod over previous administrations, cared little for what happened to most Americans as long as their Wall Street and corporate donors kept the contributions flowing. You haven't heard much about the real Trump presidency because the media we rely on for news are part of the dishonest resistance. They're too busy pushing distorted or flatly untrue narratives against Donald Trump to simply report on the great things happening in their own country under his leadership. In this audiobook, you'll hear all about the accomplishments of this historic presidency, but first, let's shine a light on the rogues gallery of liars, leakers, and liberals who will stop at nothing to bring down a duly elected president and keep you, the American people, from taking your country back. Chapter 2. Lying, liberal, fake news, and fiction. When it comes to politics, I've been around. I've won 4 elections and lost 1. While doing so, I've had my share of good press, bad press, and blatantly untrue and unfair press. But in my 4 decades in law enforcement, politics, and television, I've never seen anything like the way the media treats President Trump. It's one thing to publish slanted, misleading, or demonstrably false stories during a presidential campaign. It's another to publish lies. The media outdid themselves in that respect during the 2016 election. And it didn't end with the election. Can you remember the last time the media continued vilifying the winner of a presidential election after the inauguration with as much negative coverage as Donald Trump has endured? No, of course you can't, because the media's treatment of President Trump is unprecedented. The liberal press didn't like George W. Bush. It despised Richard Nixon. But nothing the media wrote or said about either of them compares to the unabashed hatred they've displayed toward Donald Trump. Forget the customary honeymoon the media usually give presidents during their first 100 days. Donald Trump wasn't even given 100 hours. As Kellyanne Conway put it, we are well beyond describing the bent as liberal or biased. They are chasing stories that don't matter to most of America. A year and a half later, they haven't relented, not even a little. At the 2018 White House Correspondents' Dinner, a tradition going back almost 100 years, President Trump and anyone associated with him was assaulted with hateful remarks by whiny-voiced Michelle Wolf. Now, don't get me wrong. I have attended several of these dinners and understand part of the tradition is some good-natured ribbing of the president and his administration. No one likes a well-delivered jab better than I do. Let's be honest. There was a marked difference between the jokes made by Michelle Wolf about the president, Kellyanne Conway, and especially Sarah Sanders, and the ribbing directed at President Obama or any of his predecessors. Wolf's comments were way over the line of even edgy comedy. Can you imagine if a conservative guest speaker insulted Susan Rice's or Michelle Obama's appearance even as part of a supposed comedy routine? Apparently, liberals have no problem with such treatment of a woman as long as she is in some way connected to Donald Trump. Worst of all, Wolf wasn't remotely funny. Her hatred of the president completely short-circuited her talent as a comedian. Instead of witty barbs, she produced nothing but shrill invective. Even if her target had been a president I didn't support, it would have been equally cringeworthy for me. One of the most hypocritical moments in Wolf's embarrassing diatribe was her lame joke lead-in. And I know as much as some of you might want me to, it's 2018 and I am a woman, so you cannot shut me up. She should have said, I'm a liberal woman, so you cannot shut me up. Because like mocking their physical appearance, the left sees nothing wrong with shutting up conservative women, and they're perfectly willing to use violence to do so. Street injustice. I have a segment on my Fox News show, Justice with Judge Jeanine, called Street Justice. I go out onto the street with a cameraman, a producer, and of course, security to try to get people to answer some questions. It's all in good fun. We try to have a few laughs. Usually, I stick close to Fox News headquarters, but sometimes we travel around. Recently, I went down toward Lower Manhattan to a park very close to New York University. We got a few people to stop and got great funny footage until some nut jobs in the park realized who I was. Every time I started talking to someone on camera, those guys would scream as loud as they could, Fox News, fake news, F Trump, grab her bleep, a reference to the female anatomy. The eyes in the back of my head were on full alert. They were so aggressive and angry, I thought one of them was going to hit me with a bottle he was carrying. But there was one kid, a student, who was also following me that day. I'm a conservative, but I don't dare say anything because it will affect my friendships and my grades, he said. I tried to talk to him, but then he screamed, yelled, and jumped in front of the camera to fit in with the others. He was too scared, I guess, to let anyone know how he truly felt. The Trump campaign experienced the same as this kid and I did, but much worse. Well, it's the free speech for me, but not for thee mentality that's always on the left. Don Jr. told me, it's the do as I say, not as I do thing. Listen, I think what we learned from this election is that they are the greatest hypocrites in the history of hypocrisy. All the things that they said, this is what the evil Trump supporters are going to do, they're doing in droves. My crew ended up packing and leaving. As we rode back to Fox, I was stunned. Those clowns had no respect for the First Amendment. It was a public park. I had every right to be there. They treated me like I'm a fascist, yet they were the ones trying to deny me my free speech. That's the left today. And don't tell me for one minute that Antifa and the women's marches are not supported by George Soros, a socialist with an agenda to destroy this country and the capitalist system. For too long, people on the right have allowed this to happen. Rather than get our hands dirty fighting such fights, conservatives have ignored the left's violent rhetoric. I don't know anyone on the right today who would try to do what those people outside NYU did to me. Not a single one. The Fake News Awards. Not only does this all-consuming hatred for Donald Trump render comedians not funny, it has rendered the news media virtually incapable of reporting basic facts. The lies were so outrageous during Trump's first year in office that he created the Fake News Awards. It was a somewhat tongue-in-cheek move that injected much-needed humor into the poisonous political atmosphere, but each award was richly deserved. First prize went to Paul Krugman, who predicted in the opinion pages of the New York Times that the stock market would plummet and then never recover from the election of Donald Trump. This from a Nobel Prize-winning economist. I've often wondered how people like him can become so blinded by their hatred of Donald Trump that they forget decades of training in their chosen fields. Krugman, a renowned economist, is not a moron. Second prize went to ABC's Brian Ross, whose investigative unit at ABC did some Inspector Clouseau-level investigating when it ran a story that Michael Flynn was prepared to testify against the president, alleging he had personally directed Flynn to contact Russia before the election. That was a lie. The request by the president occurred after the election and was completely proper. The story was false. It was poorly sourced and involved about as much investigative journalism as a tabloid gossip column. Like everyone else in the media, Ross, a previously well-respected, award-winning reporter, allowed his hatred of Donald Trump to cloud his judgment. ABC News retracted the story the next day and eventually demoted Ross. It was a demotion well-deserved. The bronze medalist was my personal favorite. The team over at CNN published a story alleging members of Trump's campaign had intimate ties with people at WikiLeaks. Those knuckleheads managed to convince their editors the Trump campaign had plotted to coordinate the release of stolen emails to damage Hillary Clinton. Specifically, it erroneously reported the Trump campaign received an email from WikiLeaks giving the campaign access to the Clinton emails on September 4, 2016, before the emails were made public. The Trump campaign did not have any advance access, nor, more importantly, a relationship with WikiLeaks. The email from WikiLeaks to the Trump campaign was actually sent on September 14, the day after WikiLeaks had published the Clinton emails, which CNN's online version of the story now acknowledges. To add insult to injury, the Clinton News Network suffered the indignity of being corrected by fellow fake news outlet, The Washington Post. It's not as if Donald Trump had needed any help from WikiLeaks in the first place. WikiLeaks only confirmed what everyone ostensibly knew. In addition to being crooked, Hillary was a hypocritical oligarch who largely had contempt for her deluded supporters. All the emails did was confirm that. Fake news is profitable to CNN, I get it. Without Trump, CNN would be suffering a deficit rather than a Trump-fueled cash infusion. The Fake News Awards list goes all the way to 11, but you get the idea. The press in America has become the public relations arm of the Democrat Party, which is so blinded by rage for its loss of the White House and Congress that it will stop at nothing to cook up a negative story about Donald Trump with no regard for truth. One of the chief differences between President Trump and other presidents is his transparency. He doesn't hide behind political correctness. He doesn't spout two-faced double talk. He's just a hard-nosed, what-you-see-is-what-you-get successful businessman and negotiator. Rather than applaud him, the so-called resistance, including its fake news mouthpiece, would rather take him down, sacrificing our economic success and international strength for the sake of their agenda. They would rather see America fail than see Donald Trump succeed. It is shocking, for example, that in the week that North Korea announced as a precondition to meeting with the president, it would shut down its nuclear testing, the press coverage of Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels was wall to wall. They get a search warrant for Trump's lawyer's office, but HRC, her Royal Clinton, doesn't even get a subpoena. Instead, she gets a heads up that it's time to destroy the evidence of her crimes. And rather than applaud the president for what no other president had accomplished, the media relegated the story to secondary reporting. It didn't matter that so many Americans were able to breathe a sigh of relief or that a war seemed to have been averted. On Friday, April 13, 2018, McClatchy reported that special counsel Robert Mueller had evidence the president's personal attorney, Michael Cohen, had in fact traveled to Prague in 2016, as the Steele dossier alleged, for a meeting with Putin agents. The Mueller team had to put out a statement that said in part, "Be very cautious about any source that claims to have knowledge about our investigation and dig deep into what they claim before reporting on it. If another outlet reports something, don't run with it unless you have your own sourcing to back it up." This hatred is all-consuming and puts the security of our country in danger. Regardless of the damage they do to our country, its institutions, and its traditions of freedom, these liars, leakers, and liberals are determined to sabotage the Trump presidency. The very same publications that used to call President Trump when he was a real estate mogul now stop at nothing to make him look bad. Gone are the days when they would cover both sides of an issue or call anyone, let alone their old pal Donald Trump, for a fair, on-the-record quote. They twist words and play with facts until the American people can't tell what's true anymore. Fake news reporters don't need to interview people on the record anymore because their sources can all be anonymous. There's no longer any accountability for what they say because names will never be attached to anything. As of this writing, the lies haven't stopped. There was a time when the press would self-reproach for publishing inaccurate information. Today, the media strategy is, if you repeat something often enough, people will believe it's true. That includes telling you lying, leaking James Comey is some kind of hero instead of the politically motivated weasel he appears to be to anyone with any grip on reality. More on Cardinal Comey later. Doubling down on dishonesty. A favorite narrative of the left says the White House is in chaos. I have been in the White House on several occasions. Based on these crazy reports, I expected to see people hanging from chandeliers and vomiting or hiding under their desks. In March, with this anticipated scene in mind, I sat down with Chief of Staff John Kelly, who completely refuted the media's representation of the White House as chaotic. Suffice it to say, both the general's remarks and my first-hand observations in the West Wing confirm the reports are demonstrably false. Even more egregious is the media's characterization of the Robert Mueller investigation. The president rightly calls this fiasco a witch hunt, while the media would have you believe that any day it will conclusively prove the outlandish Russiagate conspiracy theory to be true. Headline after headline uses the words closing in to describe the special counsel's progress. The Russia collusion investigation is over. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein announced that himself, for all intents and purposes, when he indicted 13 Russians for interfering in the election and said explicitly that no Americans had been knowingly involved. That means neither Donald Trump nor any of his campaign team was involved, as they are all Americans. Think about the campaign in the early days when they say this Russia stuff happened, Donald Jr. said to me. We couldn't have colluded to order a cheeseburger. So any suggestion, explicit or implicit, that Mueller is getting close to proving the Democrats' unhinged conspiracy theory is just plain wishful thinking. As the president has said, there was no collusion by the Trump campaign. The investigators have yet to admit that the actual effect the Russians had on election results did not change the numbers or the outcome of the election. That's why Mueller has all but given up on the original theory and is now supposedly focusing on trying to prove the president obstructed justice when he fired liar and leaker James Comey. Lots of luck with that. The president has a constitutional right to fire the head of the FBI. He is expressly given this power in Article 2 of the Constitution. How are you going to prove impropriety if the president fires one of his own subordinates? Even Comey himself admitted almost immediately after his dismissal that the president had the unqualified authority to fire him for any reason or no reason. The whole idea that unelected members of executive agencies are supposed to act independently of the elected executive they report to is preposterous to begin with. But the idea that Trump fired Comey to obstruct a legitimate investigation into his own actions is absurd. After more than a year, there is no evidence of collusion or coordination with Russia by the Trump campaign to influence the election, nor any evidence of obstruction of justice. The special counsel is now simply looking for anything and everything with which they can make a case against the president, no matter how unrelated to the election or his duties. This is the nature of special counsels, Kellyanne Conway astutely observed. Don't forget that Monica Lewinsky didn't exist until 15 months into the Whitewater special counsel. She was somewhere across the country in college when that all started. There would be no special counsel and Robert Mueller wouldn't be a household name, but for spineless Attorney General Jeff Sessions unnecessarily recusing himself from all things Russia and Jim Comey illegally leaking federal records to his Columbia professor pal, Dan Richmond, to give to the New York Times. When this cockamamie narrative finally implodes and backfires on the real criminals, the media will come up with a new fake story with which to slander the president. Their hatred has no limits and knows no shame. But it wasn't always like this. The Donald and the Press. Believe it or not, there was a time when the media adored Donald Trump. Throughout the 1980s and 90s, you could hardly pass a newsstand without seeing Donald's face on the covers of glossy tabloids and 50-cent newspapers. There were stories about him gallivanting around New York and attending charity galas, photographs of him standing in front of new buildings, and long stories about business in which he'd give tips to aspiring entrepreneurs. Whether it was about renovating a dilapidated hotel into a showpiece, erecting soaring towers that drew the envy of his peers, or mostly out of his own pocket building a skating rink in Central Park, the media reported positive news about Donald Trump on a very regular basis. Before Donald Trump even thought about running for president, he ran his real estate business out of an office on the 26th floor of Trump Tower in New York City. You've probably seen pictures of it. His office had floor-to-ceiling windows with a jaw-dropping view of Central Park, regalia and awards from his life, and a big wooden desk in the middle. Walking in, you'd often find him leaning back in his chair with the phone to his ear. The man was always on the phone. As he said in The Art of the Deal, there's rarely a day with fewer than 50 calls, and often it runs to over 100. In between, I have at least a dozen meetings. The majority occur on the spur of the moment, and few of them last longer than 15 minutes. I rarely stop for lunch. I leave my office by 6:30, but I frequently make calls from home until midnight and all weekend long. I can confirm this. No matter who was calling him, business affiliates, the press, or the Westchester County District Attorney, Donald would take the call. By the way, never in my life have I met someone who'd drop everything to help another person faster than Donald Trump. Aside from his friends and business partners, the people who called most often were newspaper and magazine reporters. He always took their calls, too. Reporters couldn't get enough of Donald Trump. He was funny and engaging, and his quotes always sold newspapers, magazines, and ad space on news shows. If you were in Manhattan in the mid-1980s, you knew all about the saga of Wolman Rink. It was all over the newspapers. At the time, before Mayor Rudy Giuliani took the reins, New York City was the epitome of failed liberal policies and government dysfunction. Falling into disrepair, the Rink was a symbol of urban decay. You had a better chance of buying a bag of dope there than renting a pair of skates. The city had spent nearly 6 years and $13 million trying to rebuild the Rink, but had made very little progress. The press was having a field day eating liberal mayor Ed Koch alive. Enter Donald Trump. He made a public offer to Koch. Give me 6 months and I'll build a new rink for the cost of the materials. Koch wanted no part of the deal. He didn't want to look any more foolish than he already did. But pressure from the press, nearly all of it backing Donald Trump, forced the mayor's hand. Koch and his crooked limousine liberal pals secretly hoped Donald would fail. Instead, he built the rink in 4 months, not six, and brought the project in 25% below budget. Wolman Rink is a Central Park attraction today. If you visit New York City in the winter and go for a skate, you can thank our current president for it. Even when the press was taking shots at Donald's lavish lifestyle, there was respect for him. Occasionally, the press would even publish the acts of charity that Trump preferred to keep secret. Donald tipped waiters, doormen, workers, and everyone in between. And I mean tipped, like hundreds of dollars. He rarely leaves one of his restaurants or building sites without slipping someone a wad of bills that could choke a horse, with instructions to distribute it among the people staffing the place. He's also quick to help in bigger ways. When a terminally ill 3-year-old boy needed treatment he could only get in New York, Donald Trump flew him across the country on his private jet. When ex-Buffalo Bills quarterback Jim Kelly battled cancer at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, Donald gave the Kelly family use of his townhouse. Even the New York Daily News ran a story about a botched mugging on Fifth Avenue with a picture of Donald Trump. The headline read, "Muggers Trumped." According to the reporter, Trump had been riding by in his limo and had seen one man hitting another with a baseball bat. Before anyone could intervene, Donald opened the door and ran out onto the sidewalk screaming, "Stop that! Put that bat down!" The assailant took one look at Donald, dropped the bat, and took off. That's the way American journalism used to be. Stories weren't driven by some reporter's agenda, and they weren't printed to further a cause or bring a person down. Not in the best cases, anyway. Coverage of Donald Trump wasn't all positive even back then. The Daily News took its share of shots at him over the years. Along with the usual suspects, such as the New York Times and the New York Post, the news didn't hold back when he had some trouble in his casino ventures or when his net worth began falling in the 1990s. They mostly ran stories that were deeply sourced and included both sides of the argument when it was necessary. When the stories concerned him, Donald was always happy to be interviewed. Between 1980 and 2015, Trump graced the covers of thousands of news magazines and sold countless tabloids and broadsheets. There's no telling how much money he made for the media back then, and the money he made for them back then doesn't hold a candle to the money he's made for them since he decided to run for president. When CNN Worldwide President Jeff Zucker, who put Donald Trump on TV in the first place with The Apprentice on NBC, decided to air Trump campaign rallies from beginning to end, the cable network's viewership skyrocketed. It was a sign of things to come. A few months into the election, online readership of the New York Times climbed above 1 million for the first time in history. In the first month of his presidency, the Times sold 132,000 new subscriptions. 2 months after the election, the Washington Post added 60 new newsroom jobs and set records for digital traffic and advertising. Vanity Fair, The New Yorker, The Atlantic, and other magazines also set subscription records. Those news organizations called it the Trump bump. And without it, many of them would be heading to the big recycling bin in the sky. But as soon as the Trump campaign began picking up steam in 2016, positive stories about the real Donald Trump became harder to find than one of Hillary Clinton's emails. The news organizations no longer had any interest in telling the truth. Instead, they sold their collective soul to the conspiracy to take Donald Trump down. They knew that phony, negative stories would sell. The media's 2016 about-face. During the primary, Donald Trump provided the media with never-before-seen viewership. He drove home his policies while punching and counterpunching his opponents. With a blend of humor and name-calling, the ratings went through the roof. Then the unexpected happened. Trump won. Suddenly, the media shifted gears. It damned Donald Trump and crowned Hillary Clinton. Coverage of the 2016 election became the most negative in the history of U.S. politics, and coverage only got worse during President Trump's first months in office. Every day, establishment hacks who'd weaseled their way into the White House would collect information, store it, then leak it to reporters to make themselves look and feel powerful. Those leakers teamed up with liars and liberals at newspapers and television stations on both coasts, all of whom were starving for negative information about the president. In 2013, the New York Times reported that their readers' number one concern was anonymous sources. Did the newspaper listen? Of course not. Pull out a copy of the Times tomorrow morning, swipe it from your dentist office if you can, and count the number of identified sources and stories about Donald Trump. I bet you'll be able to count them on one hand. In 1974, when Deep Throat brought down President Richard Nixon, no one doubted the veracity of the claims being made because the press was held in such high regard. Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein and their peers took thorough steps to verify claims made by the anonymous source. They would not move a story forward without looking into it more closely. Watching Carl Bernstein today, as he predicts Trump's imminent impeachment, you have to wonder if he's forgotten everything that made him the quintessential investigative journalist. What Donald Trump says about the media is true. If news organizations continue to make up sources, improperly fact-check, and knowingly lie, they should face major consequences, even if that means the person wrong has to threaten to take them to court, as Anthony Scaramucci did with CNN. Until then, news sites will continue to rely on anonymous sources to propagate their agenda. Unfortunately, today, Since there are no real consequences for journalists who lie, the press lies with impunity. That's the business model. One lies, another swears to it, and then the rest pile on. If the lies are exposed, the fake news media just moves on to the next lie. They never cop to their falsehoods. They just spin the next false narrative, and on it goes. The genius of Donald Trump was recognizing that Americans instinctively felt that the press was lying. He was the one who put the laser focus on the press and their lack of accountability, and America came along with him. With just one phrase, fake news, the president has deflected and defeated billions of negative words written about him. With the fake news awards, he raised exposure of dishonest media to an art form. When the president tweeted the link to the awards at GOP.com, the website was so inundated, it crashed. The awards were humorous, but they served to send a much larger, more important message to the American public, that the relationship between Donald Trump and the press, which had been long and healthy for years and beneficial to both parties, was over. What changed? Donald J. Trump certainly didn't. Go back and look at video of his appearances on programs such as the Oprah Winfrey Show in the late 1980s, or read some of his comments on trade and foreign policy in the newspapers. Nothing's different. He's been advocating for fairness in international trade, promoting his America First agenda, and denouncing political correctness for decades. You won't find him switching positions like other politicians. That's because Donald Trump has guiding principles, and one of his core principles is fairness. Fairness is equality of opportunity, not equality of outcome. Candidate Trump elevated fairness as a core governing value in this country, said Kellyanne Conway. And he took fairness and used it as a thread. Fairness undergirds his policy on trade. He doesn't say, I'm going to rip up all the trade deals and walk away. He says, I want free trade. I want trade, but I want it to be fair to America, reciprocal and fair. It's never fair to American interests, workers. It needs to be. For years, people, including Republicans, ran around and said, what's fair to the illegal immigrants? What more can we give them? Here's a driver's license. Here's housing. Here are benefits. Donald Trump finally stood up and asked, hey, what's fair to the American worker who's competing with the illegal immigrant for that job? What's fair to our local law enforcement who can't keep up? What's fair to the brave men and women Border Patrol agents? What's fair to the moms in the suburbs who are struggling with the drugs that are coming over the border and into their communities? Fairness is about school choice and charters. It's about taxation. It's not fair that some are able to hire a coterie of accountants and lawyers over the years to favor the wealthy and well-connected, while others pay high taxes. It's not fair that in the U.S. we pay a 35% corporate tax rate, and all these countries that used to have a higher rate too saw how foolish we were being and lowered theirs. It's not fair you've got trillions of unpatriated dollars that are legally overseas. So fairness is very important to him. And if you listen to many female voters long enough, they're talking about fairness. As the president's son, Don Jr., told me, the only thing that's changed about Donald Trump is his tolerance for the nonsense going on around him. Just watch him, Don Jr. said. You can see him on those shows even then. You can tell he's getting a little more fed up, a little more fed up, a little more fed up. And he's not a man who won't take action. He stepped up when it was time. That was the beginning of the end. Donald Trump, a longtime fixture of the tabloids and political newspapers, saw how the system worked and got sick of it. By the time he'd watched Barack Obama float from nowhere to the top of the American political class, carried along by fawning news coverage from virtually every media outlet in the country, he had finally had enough. So, While Obama was running America down on the world stage and caving into deals with our enemies in Iran, he decided to act. When it was time, he launched the most successful campaign in the history of U.S. politics, not by going to war with the press or trying to play its game, but by going completely around it. On Twitter, Donald Trump can reach more people than CNN, The New York Times, The Daily News, and the rest of the media combined. He reaches people those media outlets ignore. It seems the only time the flyover states show up in the pages of The New York Times is when factory workers lose their jobs. We see the victims of crooked trade deals staring out the dirty window of a diner. After the reporters get a few quotes and file their stories, they leave town and the newspaper quickly forgets all about the people in those diners. But Donald Trump sent a message. I'm listening to you, and I'm going to help. For caring about those people and what happened to the country he loves, Donald Trump became a media target. Stirring up hate and conflict has always been an integral part of the fake news business model. According to the Pew Research Center, this is not unique to Donald Trump or to political coverage in general. Newspapers have been falling down this slippery slope for years, getting more and more negative with time. Ever heard the saying, if it bleeds, it leads? It's a common joke around newsrooms. It means that if you've got a story about a factory that's been saved from shutting down by a shrewd policy move, and another story about a bomb that went off and killed three people in a country no one's ever heard of, you lead with the second one. The more negative, the better. The more sex violence and palace intrigue, the better. Trust me, I know. As an assistant district attorney, I prosecuted domestic violence cases for years before they ever got coverage in the media. So, when did the media start covering me? During the O.J. Simpson case, a professional football player is accused of murdering his ex-wife and her friend in cold blood. That was what it took for people to start paying attention to domestic violence. Suddenly, I was all over Larry King Live, even hosting the show, breaking down details of the case for Larry's viewers. I was again under the glare of TV lights when I reopened the investigation against accused murderer Robert Durst. Fake news survives on the sensational with no regard for substance. According to a study by the International Journal of Press Politics, negative news has been increasing steadily since the early 20th century. When a newspaper runs a headline bashing someone its readers don't like, it has a 33% chance of selling more newspapers that day. Bad news happens quickly, and it's easy to report on. The media just have to find a body or a victim, interview some people who saw the crime occur, and print the story. Progress, on the other hand, takes time. Stories about accomplishments in foreign policy or immigration are made up of slow events and small decisions which the press has no interest in covering. That's not even mentioning the negative coverage of Trump himself. If the trend toward negative news was bad, it got much worse when he took office. A study by the Pew Research Center found that of all newspaper and network stories about Trump, 62% were negative. That's compared to just 20% for Barack Obama and 28% for George W. Bush. Our current president is a man who used to appear frequently in the pages of those same news outlets and enjoyed a symbiotic relationship with them for years. The minute Donald Trump announced his presidential run on a platform that didn't politely acquiesce to their progressive globalist agenda, they turned on him like a pack of feral dogs. As expected, they're alienating a large percentage of their audience by doing so. As Eric Trump put it, I learned that these people do not understand the sentiment of this country. You have certain individuals from the mainstream media who sit in their ivory towers, their fancy offices, and multi-million-dollar apartments. They have never spent 18 months in America's heartland, They never saw shuttered factories, hard-working farmers, struggling families, ill-cared-for veterans, and tens of millions of people who feel that they have been forgotten by their own government. Candidly, despite what you saw on TV, when I was in those states, I saw significantly more Hillary for prison signs than I did.